Welcome to the Garden Talk Podcast, where we interview growers from all over the world, both beginners and experts, seeking to learn more about what they know about gardening and how they do things in their garden. Hey, what's up, everybody? For those of you that don't know me, my name is Chris, aka Mr. Grow It, and you're tuned into the Garden Talk Podcast. This is episode number 125. In this episode, I interview Tad Hussey. He's been on the podcast once before, episode number 103, where we talked all about how to reuse your old potting soil for another grow. There was a ton of knowledge dropped in that episode, with many of you commenting on how helpful it's been for you. Well, Tad is back for another episode. This time he's talking about various organic amendments that you can add to your soil, with many of them not being very well known. If you want to see short, bite-sized clips of these episodes, search Garden Talk Clips on YouTube. I also have a gardening channel where I have over 130 videos showing the plants that I've grown. I'll have both of those channels linked down in the YouTube description section below. One of my goals for this podcast is to bring free information about gardening to the general public. That being said, I'd like to thank the sponsors of today's episode who helped make that goal possible. Thanks to AEC Infinity for sponsoring this episode. Check out their electric sprayers with a 2-liter capacity and an adjustable nozzle that can go from a strong jet to a fine mist spray. Their sprayers are battery-powered and can be used for 3 hours on a full charge. No pumping required, and it's a one-button operation. Click the link in the description section below so you can learn more about their sprayers, and the discount code MrGrowIt15 works on both Amazon and their website, acinfinity.com. Stash Blend. Stash Blend consists of several ingredients in one, so you no longer have to buy individual bottles. It includes corn steep liquor, seaweed extract, humic acid, beneficial bacteria, silica, and mycorrhizal fungi. It can be used in addition to your synthetic base nutrients or be used in living soil systems. Simply mix it into water and water your plants with it. You can get it at stashblend.com, link in the description section below, and use the discount code THESTASH. Mars Hydro. The Mars Hydro 420 sale is active now. You can get some amazing deals with discounts up to 30% on a wide range of their products. LED grow lights, UVIR deep red supplemental lights, grow tents, inline fans, clip fans, DWC systems, and more. Some deep discounts include FC6500 is $100 off, FC8000 is $120 off, and there are many more. Go to the website mars-hydro.com and you can use the discount code MrGrowIt for a discount on any of their products. And we are back. Welcome to the Garden Talk Podcast. Today I am joined once again with Tad Hussey from Kiss Organics. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing pretty good, man. Appreciate you coming on once again. We had such a great conversation the first time around. The audience really, really liked it. It was on how to reuse your soil and really went into deep, real deep on how to do that. And a lot of people are now saving a lot of money because they're not throwing away their soil. They're actually able to reuse it. So appreciate you dropping some knowledge bombs there. And we got a great topic for today, really just going over a bunch of different amendments that can be added into your garden, whether it be organic, all natural, but ways to add these organic inputs into your garden and have a successful grow from it. So a lot of these inputs I'm actually, some of them I'm familiar with, there's a lot of them I'm actually not familiar with or really too deep of knowledge into regards to what the benefits are, how to use them, and so on and so forth. So we have a whole long list here. Before we get into the list, can you introduce yourself for those that didn't catch the first episode we did together?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Tad Hussey. I am the owner of Kiss Organics. Kiss stands for Keep It Simple, and that's really been the goal of our company from the start. We started out in the nursery and landscaping business. My parents owned a nursery and landscaping company for 30 years, I think. So I've been around plants my whole life, but I recently, well, not recent anymore, 20 years ago, got into specifically medicinal plant cultivation and created for our company. We have living soils specifically for medicinal plants. And we really work to take a science-based approach at how to grow these plants to their optimal genetic potential.
That's awesome. Yeah, I have been using your nutrient mix that you have, nutrient pack, using that for several grows now, and it's so good, so awesome, just so easy to use, just one scoop per plant, and then do it a couple times throughout the grow, water only from there on out, and plants are healthy, and you get to a good harvest from it. So I've definitely used Kiss Organics products in the past, and I've got a few on my list here that I want to purchase coming up here soon. So, but yeah, we met in person. We were able to meet at the Soil Summit over in Pahrump, Nevada, and such a great time. That was a great event. I only got to make it to the first day, unfortunately. I have a 5-month-old that I have to care for, but I was able to sneak out there for the first day. It was awesome. You had a great speech on there, you and a couple guys from KISS. It was really good to sit down and talk with you. I think I talked to your ear off for like 45 minutes or an hour or something like that. We had a good conversation though.
No, I really enjoyed it. It's so nice to meet these people in person that you've had, you know, conversations with and really talked to. So no, it was a lot of fun. I hope we get to meet up again at future events.
Absolutely. I'll definitely go to the Soil Summit next year if there is one. That'd be great. All right, let's start getting into some of these amendments. So we have a long list here, like I mentioned. Let's just go one by one. Start with organic whole grain malted barley. Talk to us about that, baby, what the benefits are, how to use them, your overall thoughts on them, so on and so forth.
Yeah, before we dive into the malted barley, I just want to back up really quick and say, to me, the best way to amend your garden is through a soil test. So if you have the ability to get a soil test and then get a specific recommendation, we can add back in the exact fertility that was removed when you harvested your plant. And that's what I just did in my garden. That's sort of what the whole idea with the nutrient pack is. If you can't soil test, then the idea is then we can get you close based on adding a general amount of fertility overall back into the soil. But then there's all these specific amendments and they all do different things and have different benefits. And that's really what I think we're going to talk about today. And to start with organic malted barley. So this actually dates back to Clackamas Coote, and is something that he came up with the idea being borrowed from the beer industry, that malting barley freezes barley sort of at its highest enzymatic levels. And because of the enzymes in the seed itself, these enzymes are just things that speed up chemical reactions. And so what the idea was by adding malted barley is you're speeding up a lot of the natural plant processes and reactions. And so you would take the malted barley, you would grind it up, apply it to your soil, and then watered it. And that was part of something Coote came up with as a way of getting better health and growth. Now, I've done this a couple times. I did a trial in my tomato garden when I had the farm, and I didn't see a statistical difference on my plants there. So it's not something that I utilize on a regular basis, but we do offer it. A lot of people love it. I've heard many people say their plants just exploded after trying it. So in some way, it must have been addressing some limiting factor of growth in those scenarios. So I'm not here to say it doesn't work. I'm just saying for me, I didn't get the results I wanted, but I think it's definitely worth trying in your garden.
That's an input that I haven't tried yet myself. I've heard a lot about it. It is one of those things that are really optional, right? Like you don't have to add it in order to get through the grow, but it is something that could certainly have some benefits. At least it is said to have some benefits. So I'll have to give it a try in the future. These next few that we have on the list here are kind of similar. So we could probably talk about at the same time, which is a compost. It's a fungal compost. And then there's also fish compost. I thought it'd be a good opportunity to kind of talk about compost overall and the differences between the two.
Yeah, so compost is a whole podcast in and of itself. Making the compost, determining the quality of the compost, it can vary dramatically depending on what the original feedstocks were, how the material was actually compost. Was it thermophilically compost, meaning it killed all the weed seeds and all the pathogens? Was it processed long enough that the nitrogen cycled? There's a lot of things that go into this. So just be aware, I guess the big takeaway is that not all composts are created equal. You want to source a high quality one. In general, composts tend to be lower in fungi than bacteria. And so, you know, we call ours a fungal compost for one of the ones on our website, because we're adding food sources to feed fungi to get a more balanced ratio there. That being said, really just make sure that your source of compost is clean, because compost is going to be your biggest contaminant in your grow in terms of heavy metals and in terms of pests and pathogens. So pretty much all pests and pathogens can be avoided in compost if it's properly thermophilically composted, with the exception of fungus gnats. Anytime you bring organic matter like compost into your grow space, you're potentially adding fungus gnats. So it's always a good idea to have a plan for that, like BTI or SF nematodes, something along those lines.
So when a consumer is looking to purchase some compost, you said look for a high quality one. Is there something like in the product listing that they can like look for, to identify whether or not it is a quality compost?
Yeah, it's a little bit complicated. Every compost manufacturer should be able to provide you with a chemical analysis of their product, which they're required by law to have just to sell as a commercial compost. And that'll tell you some key information like C to N ratio, that carbon to nitrogen ratio, to show you that that material is fully composted, that it's free of pathogens. They'll have that testing. What they don't really have for you, which I think is also important, is sort of what are the physical properties of that compost? So how much large particulate is in it? How well screened is it? Because that can affect the physical properties of your soil when you add it. And then the other thing is the biological properties of that compost. This is a time when I like to break out the microscope and throw the compost under there and just make sure that I'm seeing all sets of functional microorganisms in decent quantities. And that's really the best way to do it, is sort of all three of those things, and then do a germination test as well. If you're not going to do all that, then you really have to rely on the manufacturer or the supplier to be giving you accurate information, or that you trust that what they're providing is going to be good, or maybe you have buddies or things that have tried it. But keep in mind, with every compost that you add, or even compost extract or compost tea, you're adding some fertility, usually nitrogen and potassium, and you want to account for that in your re-amending process so you don't overdo it.
You mentioned a germination test. Can you kind of go into a little bit of detail what you mean by that?
Yeah, you can just throw some seeds in there. Radishes are a good option a lot of times, because I think they're fairly sensitive to herbicides. So just some cheap seeds is a way to see if the plants are able to grow in it. Usually the compost manufacturer will have germination tests on their analysis that they can send you, so that it'll show, you know, we had 96% germination in this, so you know that there's no residual herbicides or anything else from that compost source, because some composts are made from different manures or commercially collected yard waste, and so there are sources of contaminants that could be potentially an issue in your garden depending on where you're sourcing it from.
That makes sense. And you said not all compost is created equal. Would you also say that as far as the application rates, you know, how much to apply, how often to apply, is there any general guidance amongst all composts, or do you have to kind of look at the packaging and get the manufacturer's recommendation?
So if we're talking about making a soil from scratch, one of the most popular formulations is this Cornell mix, which is a third, a third, a third. So that's a third peat moss, a third aeration like perlite or pumice, and then a third compost. Now, I personally like to use less compost than that. I'll use compost in most of my commercial mixes around 15% of my total media. And then once that soil is established and I go to re-amend, I will rarely add compost, mostly because I don't want additional contamination. Specifically, I don't want to have to deal with fungus gnats, and I also want to risk bringing any more heavy metals into the scene. So I tend to not add compost every cycle, but a lot of folks do and get really good results too. So I'm not here to say that doesn't work, but you just need to be thoughtful about your application rates. Once that soil is in place, you know, and you're running, I wouldn't add more than a cubic foot per yard of total compost every cycle. That would be the max I would want to add.
Okay, that's good to know. Moving on down the list, we've got biochar next. Can you talk to us about biochar?
Yeah, biochar is amazing. I became a believer when I visited a facility, and the only difference between the two soils, they were using our water-only soil, and then we made a formulation adding in 8% biochar by volume. They were getting about 8 or 9% better growth and yield with the addition of biochar. And like compost, not all biochar is created equal. There's a big difference between biochar and charcoal, so you do have to do a little research. But by using biochar, you're getting the nutrients are going to be better retained. Heavy metals are going to be less available. You're going to get better water retention. And just we see better overall health and growth with the plants. I'm not sure that I fully understand it at this point either, at least why we're getting such a dramatic response for it from it. You do need to charge the biochar, but if you're mixing your soil, you can just add raw biochar at that point in time. There's enough nitrogen and other nutrients in there that it's not an issue. But I definitely recommend if you have a soil mix that does not have biochar and adding it in at a rate of 5 to 8% of your total volume can really make a big difference in your overall plant health.
Biochar is something I've added into my soil here and there. Haven't really been calculated approach, to be honest with you, but I need to kind of circle back around to it and make sure I'm using it correctly. You know what I mean? Because I don't want to use too much. Don't want to use too little. I feel like it's got to kind of be the right amount in order to kind of see an impact from it, right?
Yeah, it's a pretty safe amendment to add. The one thing to be aware of is it can alter your pH. It tends to be alkaline. So you just want to make sure that your pH isn't creeping up too high to pull you out of an effective nutrient uptake range.
Oh, okay. Something to keep an eye on. Next on the list, I have worm castings. Now, in particular, African nightcrawler worm casting, which is on your website. And it really made me think of there are different types of worm castings. And we don't really talk about that much, right? So worm castings, I think a lot of my audience is familiar with the benefits of it, kind of how to use it. But if you can break that down for us, and also kind of the differences between, like, you know, African nightcrawler worm casting versus other types.
Yeah. So basically the African is just the type of worm that is used in this system. It's a larger worm, larger poop. So it looks really nice. And I really like the African one that we carry, but there's nothing, I'm not here to say that like African worm castings are going to be superior to red wiggler worm castings, for example. It's really the most important factors with worm castings are the feedstock. So what the worms are fed, the quality of that, how long the worms work that material. So when you look at worm castings, and it's easier with African because they make bigger poop, but what you should see is a bunch of tiny balls. If you're seeing a bunch of other stuff in there, that means that the worms haven't worked that material fully. So that's the biggest factor in terms of getting pure castings and getting your money's worth. We used to sell a red wiggler casting, but what we found over time was this particular source was higher chlorides and sodium in the final product than we want, because we're always testing these things. And so we stopped selling that one. But prior to that, from a biological perspective, the African looked just as good as the red wiggler, but the chlorides and sodium were much higher in the red wiggler, so we dropped it. So just be sure to, you know, look into your sources and make sure you're adding things, because when you get too high of sodium or chlorides in your soil, both of those things can cause issues with your EC and limit available nutrient uptake for your plant.
Yeah, too much sodium can certainly inhibit some of the other nutrient being uptaked. And that's a problem I ran into. I have high sodium in my water, high sodium, bicarbonates. And so when I tried using tap water here, it was a terrible result. I had deficiencies, unfortunately. A whole bunch of crap was going on in the medium there. It was not a good result at all. So that's interesting that was in the worm castings, though.
Yeah. Water is the most important thing. Whenever I move to a new location, the first thing I do is test my water and make sure that it's suitable for irrigation, because what you can drink is not necessarily what you want to put into your soil or put on your plants. So that's a really good point. I'm sorry you're dealing with that.
And in regards to application rate, now, is this more generalized versus the different types of worm castings? Like, typically what I'll do is, either a cup, or I'll do like an inch across the top layer of the soil. Is there a certain application rate or general application rate that you advise folks to use for worm castings?
No. So the way I approach worm castings is really because they're so expensive we usually have limited access to them because of the cost. I tend to use them specifically for biology. So I will use them, like you said, with a light top dressing, or I'll make a compost extract or compost tea out of them. An aerated compost tea is a way of extracting and replicating those microorganisms. So I think those are the best ways to get the most bang from your buck from earthworm castings.
Good to know. Next on the list is KISS Organics Microbe Catalyst. Talk to us about that.
Sure. Yeah. So this product specifically was something that we discovered worked really well as a diversified food source for making compost tea. So we called it a microbe catalyst because it speeds up the microbial reproduction in your tea, and it's easier to use than sticky liquid like unsulfured blackstrap molasses, for example. So yeah, we have rates and recommendations for people to use that as a sort of a compost tea food source. And that's primarily what we sell it to folks for.
That's awesome. I wasn't familiar with that product at all. I'm going to have to pick some up. It seemed interesting to use that. So you basically use it in replacement to like a molasses that you would, the same dosage that you would with a tea or what?
Yeah. So in a 5-gallon brew, for example, you would add a half a cup of the microbe catalyst and a tablespoon of the alfalfa, of organic alfalfa meal. And that would be all the food that your microbes would need for that 24 hour to 36 hour brew cycle. In addition to the compost that you're adding. And that's really all you need. It makes it really easy, and it's just, it's affordable and clean. The molasses works great too. It's just kind of sticky and messy. And, that's the only reason that we formulate. It's hard to ship molasses too. So we thought adding a more diversified food source. We tend to see really good results under the microscope using that as a feedstock.
That's awesome. I'm definitely gonna have to try that out. We're on a roll here. Let's just keep on going. We've got that neem cake pellets next on the list.
Yeah. So the neem cake comes from the neem tree. It's the neem. It's also called neem seed meal. Essentially what it is, it's the pressed version of the seeds. It's what's left after they extract the oil. So it's still going to have some azadirachtin percentage. It's going to vary depending on your source and how well that material was pressed. And it's got an NPK value that's fairly good. I tend to not use neem as much anymore. When I first started out with Clackamas Coot, neem was one of his must use amendments. And so we added it to our mixes, and I was using it in Coot's mix at the time, and we still offer it, but I've dialed it back for a couple reasons. One is sort of the ecological impact of shipping a product all the way from India to here, because they're not grown here. It's grown in India. So we have to get that fertilizer here. I just think there's sources that offer us similar nutrient values that can be sourced more locally or sustainably. Second, and this is more of an issue with the oils, but we did, one of the good friends of mine was working with a farm in Oregon, and they actually failed for a chemistry of pesticide that hasn't been used in the United States since the 70s. It's been banned. And essentially what happened was that pesticide had been sprayed on the neem tree and then pressed into the, concentrated into the oil. And then when the farmer here used that oil, he ended up failing when he submitted his final flower for testing. And so this is a rare occurrence. I don't think this is something to necessarily be afraid of, but it is a potential source of contamination, and we try to limit those as much as possible. So I just think there's other options that we can turn to that are a little safer, that work just as well.
Wow, since the 70s. It was a long time ago. That's very surprising. Very surprising result.
Well, yeah, so it was obvious that the farmer, the medicinal plant farmer, hadn't been spraying this product because they wouldn't be able to source it. But the fact that it was there in trace amounts on their plant, they traced it back to this oil, and then the oil got traced all the way back to India, where they figured it out essentially. And realistically, the person who was selling the neem oil didn't realize that the product had been contaminated either, because they thought they were sourcing a clean source as well. So when we're getting things internationally, there's a certain level of trust that we're having to put in terms of how that product is produced. I mean, it's worse for our food, frankly, but it's just something to be aware of.
Great point. Next up, we've got humic acid powder. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so humic acids are derived typically from leonardite. It's a mined product. It's very good at chelation. This humic acid powder is going to have some level of fulvic. The humic and fulvic, it just relates to the size of the molecule itself. So it's a great carbon-based input that you can use when you are doing a foliar application, or even a light soil drench when you're applying other products. So it's sort of like, I put it in the category of things like surfactants that you would add to a product when you go to apply it, just to get a little better efficacy out of the product itself.
You mentioned the word chelation, and I do have a mixed audience here. Some are beginners, intermediate, some are advanced. Some know what chelation is, some don't. Do you mind taking a second here to explain what chelation is?
Yeah, chelation is just a fancy word for bonds width. So essentially what it does is bonds width and makes these minerals or your fertilizer application a little easier for the plant to access the nutrients in your application.
And is it heavy metals usually that kind of bind to that chelate easier? I'm speaking a little bit above my head here. I'm not crazy into chemistry here, but from my understanding, something like iron, for example, can be chelated and kept in that form so the plant can be uptaken. Am I in the ballpark there or what?
Yeah, iron's a tricky one because it oxidizes so rapidly. When exposed to oxygen, it changes form. But I feel like a brokered record bringing up heavy metals. What my thought was in relation to humic acid is just realize it can be another potential source of heavy metals because it is a mined product, and I have seen it come back with higher levels of lead. You're using such a tiny amount of it, it's probably not a large risk. I mean, we're talking like an eighth of a teaspoon per gallon of water, but still, it's just something. Heavy metals has been a bigger topic for a lot of growers because of regulations around growing. And so we just try to limit as much as possible. And for our own personal health too, even if I'm growing plants medically, I want to make sure that I'm growing the cleanest possible product that I can.
You really bring up a great point with the heavy metals. I think that's off of a lot of people's radar, you know, as they're not even looking at that, but it is a concern, and it can be a concern with all natural inputs as well. Some people think, oh, it's just the synthetic stuff that you got to worry about heavy metals. No, there's the all natural inputs can absolutely have heavy metals included in there as well. And we actually we covered it quite a bit in our last talk. So I want to reference people over to that last talk that we had, because you went on for several minutes just talking about heavy metals, how to check for them, things to look out for, so on and so forth. So check that last episode we did together if you want to learn more about heavy metals. Next on the list, we have coconut water powder.
Yeah, so this is another one that has to get credited back to Clackamas Coot back in the day. The idea there is that a seed has all the nutrients that it needs to grow. You don't need to add fertilizer to get a seed to germinate. So those initial stages, everything it needs is inside the seed itself. And so coconuts are the largest seeds that you can get. So by taking the water out of the coconut, what we're getting is all of those enzymes and nutrients that a plant needs to start its life. And so what folks have done is essentially taken that coconut water or the coconut water powder, which is just a dehydrated form of that's more concentrated, so it's more affordable, and then applying that to their plants as a way of getting plants some more essential enzymes and nutrients. Again, it's not something that I recommend on the regular, but we do offer it, and a lot of people really like to use it. I don't think it makes sense commercially just due to the cost associated with it. We really try to limit inputs on the commercial scale because it's all revenue driven, and we're trying to create the simplest, you know, least number of touches to get the maximal result that we can. But for a home grower, I think things like the malted barley and the coconut water powder are absolutely worth experimenting with and see what kind of results you get in your grow, and if it's worth using on a regular basis or if you just don't really see a benefit.
That's an input I haven't used just yet, but it was on my list of things to try in the future. So I'll probably be one of the ones that experiment with it in the future.
Awesome.
Next up, we have karanja seed meal. Let's get into that.
Yeah, karanja seed, very similar to neem in that it's sourced from India. It's got a little different NPK value than the neem does. I don't have a ton more to add about it other than when I did some microscope work with it, I found I take compost, distilled water, I add a little bit of neem cake, for example, to it, and I let the microbes work it for a while and then see what happens. And with the neem cake, we found the microbes actually increased in biomass, specifically bacteria seemed to really like it. With the karanja seed, it actually kind of had an opposite effect. I didn't see a lot of growth, microbial growth from adding it, which I thought was really interesting. I don't know what that means in terms of the properties of the product itself. We primarily use it just for a little bit of NPK, and I know it's something that Clackamas Coot used in his original mixes.
Pretty straightforward there. Next up on the list, I have manganese sulfate. Now, I know a lot of people are familiar with magnesium sulfate, but manganese sulfate, a little bit different. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so very important you don't confuse the two. Let's start there, because manganese is very different than magnesium. If you were to apply manganese sulfate at the rates you apply magnesium sulfate, you would get in a lot of trouble. So manganese is a trace element that all plants need. It performs a bunch of different specific plant functions, but you need parts per million of it, so you don't need very much. And what we found more recently with our soil testing is that that plants are utilizing a fair amount of manganese, and so we're applying it. Like, I just re-amended my grow space, and I applied two teaspoons per yard of soil, to give you an idea on a rate. And that, because I can't sprinkle that in evenly, I add it to water, I dissolve it, and then I water that in. And that's going to be all the manganese requirement I'll need for a whole cycle, just to give you guys an idea of how little we're using. But based on the tissue testing and the soil testing, we are seeing some manganese deficiencies or hunger that we want to address by just adding a tiny bit more.
Okay. And technically, this is a salt, right? You got two elements that are bound together, the manganese sulfate, it's salt. And a lot of people just associate salts with synthetic. However, there are all natural salts, and this is one of them, right? Do you know the source of this magnesium sulfate? I said it wrong there. Manganese sulfate?
Yeah, so a lot of these products are mined. And then refined. And it's that refining process that technically people have issue with in terms of the fact that it is a sulfate. But keep in mind that gypsum is also a sulfate. It's calcium sulfate. Magnesium sulfate, Epsom salt is also a sulfate. So all of these things are mined products. They are approved for use in organic production if you can show a deficiency on your soil test. So it's not something that I necessarily shy away from, because it's the easiest way to get targeted available manganese for my plant. But there are other ways. You will get some manganese potentially from various compost sources, rock dusts, kelp meal. You're bringing in other sources, other nutrients at the same time, and you're also bringing in more contamination and heavy metals. So it's, you got to make a choice there as to what you're comfortable with as a grower and using in your grow. And honestly, if you didn't use manganese, you probably wouldn't see a visible difference in your plant, but we are seeing it in the tissue testing that the plant is taking it up and is utilizing it.
Oh, that's interesting. It's good to know. Next up, we have Agicel 16H, which is a potassium silicate. Talk to us all about that. What are the benefits, application rate, so on and so forth?
Yeah, so many people are familiar with a lot of the silica products on the market, like Silica Blast or Dynagrow Protect, things like that. The Agicel 16H is just a dried powder that allows you to make your own liquid silica by adding your own water. So you're not paying for them to ship water. So you end up with about a gallon, a pound will equivalent to about a gallon of Dynagrow Protect in terms of the ratios. And similar to, you know, these other products that we've talked about, it is approved for use in organic production as a foliar application for IPM, but it's not allowed for soil drenches and other uses for fertility. So it is not fully organic, but it is allowed for use in organic production. So people do your research depending on how you feel about that. But silica is amazing. It helps with stem strength. It helps with drought resistance, heat resistance, pretty much all forms of abiotic stress. It mitigates microtoxicities of micronutrients in your leaf by spreading that out more evenly so you don't end up with toxicity issues. It It has so many benefits. I did a whole podcast with Dr. Wendy Zellner just talking about silica, and I learned a ton. It really should be an essential mineral. And if your soil is deficient in silica, you will actually see higher uptake of heavy metals. So getting that silica in there actually helps mitigate heavy metal issues too. So it really is a wondrous amendment. And there are other sources of silica that you can get. They just may not be quite as available. But some other options for folks are diatomaceous earth is another one. There's biogenic sources, which just means it's plant derived from things like bamboo or rice. And then lastly, the least available form is quartz or things like silica sand. Those I tend to shy away from just because they may not be available within a reasonable time frame for your grow. So adding them, you know, you may not get a result for months to years in terms of availability. But yeah, I think people should do a deep dive on silica and really consider utilizing it in your grow.
Next up on the list, we have borax. Now, this is something that I haven't really heard of people using. Talk to us, what is it and how do you go about using this in your garden?
Yeah, so borax is a source of boron. You want to be really careful with it. It's a trace mineral like manganese, but we're talking, you know, just a few parts per million. And so I would only suggest that growers use boron or borax if you have a soil test and you are low on that test and you're going to add just a tiny amount. You would mix it with water and water it in to your soil. But if you don't have a soil test, I would not even mess with it. Interestingly enough, you can pick it up at your local grocery store because it's the same stuff people use to wash their clothes. So that's kind of fun, but just be careful, very, very careful with it because you can absolutely make your soil toxic and cause a lot of issues for your plants.
That's where I heard it from, is the grocery store, but I had no idea that it was actually able to be used in the garden. That's interesting.
Yeah, kind of fun. There's a few things like that.
Is the next thing something like that? Corn gluten meal?
So corn gluten meal, it's a byproduct of corn, the ag industry. And essentially what they found, you'll see it in a lot of products as a weed preventer. So it's a pre-emergent. So you can use it to deter germination in something like your lawn if applied at the right time in the spring. Other than that, it's primarily just a nitrogen source. It's not something that we use a lot of with our medicinal plants specifically, but it is something that we do offer for folks, but we don't use a lot of it.
Got it. And so everything that we had just talked about is available on your website, correct me if I'm wrong there, kissorganics.com. One of the things I wanted to bring up, I don't know if you want to talk about it, you sent me a usual suspects chart, and I thought this was pretty interesting here. It kind of breaks down some of the soil amendments and what you get out of it as far as the nutrition. Are you able to talk about that at all?
Yeah, one of the guys at KISS, Brandon Hudson, actually kind of came up with coined the phrase usual suspects with the idea that these are the amendments or fertilizers that we tend to recommend over and over again, either because they bring in the specific nutrient that we want, they're very clean, they're very affordable, they're easily accessible. So that list that's where that list came from. And you can get it, actually download it from our website on the soil testing information page. Or if you go to our website, you can also select amendments based on what you're looking for by mineral. Like, are you looking for nitrogen? You can click on that and see all the things that are going to give you nitrogen or potassium or phosphorus. Or if you're dealing with a target pest, same kind of thing. You can click, you know, target aphids, target white flies, target spider mites. So we try to make it as simple as possible for folks to find what the information that they're looking for on the various pages. So yeah, feel free to share that list, or I'm happy to talk about any of those amendments at any point too.
Yeah, we'll definitely get that list shared. And if you want to find out more information, you can contact KISS and they'll be able to send you this chart as well and some additional information in regards to it. So taking all these inputs that we just talked about, what advice would you have for growers using these inputs for the first time?
So some of the best advice that was ever shared with me is to if you're just going to go for it, as in no soil testing, and you want to start experimenting with these things, a couple piece of advice would be sort of a half cup to a cup per cubic foot is a good rate. If it has a higher MPK value, go with that lower rate. If it has a lower one, like alfalfa meal, for example, you can go with a little bit higher rate of a cup per cubic foot. And generally, you can stay out of trouble with something like that. If you want a product that's already done that for you that you can just mix in, you can get, there's commercial products like our nutrient pack, for example, where we've already kind of done that formulation for you. It's going to give you a wide variety of amendments and you can just mix it into your soil. You don't have to go through that process. The last piece of advice I have would be, if you do have the ability to do a soil test, I absolutely recommend it, because that's going to tell us exactly what is going on with your soil. And we can then really dial things in specific for what your plants are going to need. So if we know the crop and we know the water quality and we know the fertility of the soil, we can hit whatever targets we're looking for your particular crop. But whatever you do, have fun with it. I mean, I think experimentation is a lot of fun, and I'm always doing experimenting with my plants. The one thing I think that's important when you do experiment is to just do change one variable at a time. So add biochar to half your garden. Don't do anything else differently. Because when you start experimenting, you add five different things, it's really hard to know what actually made a difference and what you're wasting money on, or maybe one of those things actually was antagonistic because it added too much potassium or too much nitrogen. So just change one thing, see what the results look like, and then make another decision your next round and go from there.
I think that's some really good advice. And one more thing I'd like to add to that is, you know, I get some viewers that tune into this or listen to this, and they think that they need to go out and buy every single one of these inputs and add it to the garden. They absolutely do not need all of these inputs in order to be successful in the grow. Actually, this particular list here, you could probably get away with not using any of it and still be successful in the grow. There's other inputs that you can add, such as a Kiss Organics nutrient pack, for example. You can use just that and get through the grow. What we've talked about today are just additional inputs that you can add to potentially get a better result in your garden, better growth, higher yield, quality, so on and so forth. And so I thought that would be worthy of mentioning here right now, because I do have some folks that think they need to buy everything. Go out and buy everything right now. And another thing is, people think that we're just trying to promote products the whole time. And the fact of the matter is, we don't care what the heck you buy. Go ahead and do it yourself. We're just here to talk shop, reveal some information here, and just have fun with it. You know, enjoy the conversation. I think some people watch my episodes sometimes and they're like, oh, you're just trying to push products. And it's like, I don't care what you buy. Go buy what you want. I'm just talking products. And it kind of goes back to the fact that we're always... in social media, there's always advertisements in front of us, and those advertisements are always products. So our brain is just kind of hardwired to think product, advertisement. You know what I mean? So just wanted to clarify that thing, that we don't care what you buy. We're just talking about the products, talking about inputs, getting Tad's advice on these different inputs, what he uses, how he uses them, and so on and so forth. So appreciate you sitting down with us today, Tad. Great talk. I will definitely have a link to Tad's channel down in the YouTube description section below. If you didn't know, he has an excellent podcast as well. More advanced podcast, similar to this Garden Talk podcast, but kind of more advanced folks. So if you are on the advanced side of things and happen to not know about his podcast, 100% recommendation for you to tune into his podcast, because I tune into it and I learn so much from your guests there. So appreciate you doing that podcast. Appreciate you coming on here today. I'll have a link to your channel and to your website in the description section below. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your day, Tad.
Thanks, Chris. Really appreciate it. You have a wonderful day too.
Thanks. Peace out, everyone. Catch you in the next episode.